This is the John Gambling Show on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right, Bill Rock, thank you. Happy Friday, everybody. It's the 21st day of September. Mr. Mayor, happy Friday to you and good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah. Everybody, everything so far so good this morning?
Yeah, we had the Steuben Day Parade last weekend, and no parades. I don't think there's any parades this weekend. I got to check my schedule.
There seems to be one almost all the time.
Well, tell me, because it's a good chance for people to have a good time.
Absolutely. Tell me about this Columbus statue. I'm intrigued by this thing.
You should go see it.
Is it really cool?
It is cool is a great way to describe it. There is a statue, 13-foot tall statue, carved from one piece of marble in 1892, if I remember my dates. And it is on a 90 or 100-foot pedestal in the middle of Columbus Circle. Trouble is, you can never get close to it. You know,
it's 100 feet up.
Yeah, it's 100 feet up in
there.
There's
traffic trying to run
Absolutely.
You down.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, it is a beautiful statue, and it's very hard for people to see. We have to, the statue needs some preservation work. You know, just a piece of marble outdoors with the wear and tear of the wind and the water and the birds and the pollution in the air. Eventually, marble needs some restoration. And this Japanese architect got the idea of, and he's done similar kinds of things, we built, with all private money, built a scaffolding around the statue, around the pedestal, the 100-foot pedestal, which we'd have to do the renovation anyways. And then we built a room. It's a living room. You go inside, and it's a good-sized living room with reasonably modern furniture from Bloomingdale's. And you can sit around and chit-chat. And in the middle of the room, on the coffee table, there is this 13-foot, maybe 5-foot in diameter, statue.
And there are windows.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the views are unbelievable of Central Park, and you look up and down Broadway and all the different avenues that come together at Columbus Circle. And it's just something different. And so you have one chance to get close, and you'll never for
it's
another 100 years.
It's open to the public. Anybody can go.
Free, open to the public. There's a ticketing system. Because you can't have too many people up there at the same time. It's going to last for 2 months. I've been there twice. Yeah, and it's really great. Would I go a third time? Yeah, probably not. But I would. I really, to say I was skeptical, you know, it sounded like a good idea. Why not do it? But it was better than that when I got there. I was
kind of like the flags, the orange flags that they threw.
Not orange. Patty Harris will go down your throat. Saffron.
Oh, excuse me,
sir.
Come
on, John.
My apologies.
Not to Patty. I accept
saffron.
Saffron.
That was a cool thing.
Yeah. And, you know.
And you did the waterfalls. We did the waterfalls.
That's another one of her projects. Yeah, Public Art Fund does all of these. And Susie Friedman and the Public Art Fund really they help raise the money. And it's art changes your views. It gives you something to think about and talk about. And the fact that people are talking about this, that's what art's supposed to be. Get you to think. But it is cool.
All right. Art of a different kind. I think it's later on this morning, is it not? Aren't you going to be there for the opening of the Barclays Center?
Taking the train right from this building downstairs, straight out to Barclays. There is more transportation under the Barclays Center than under Madison Square Garden.
Well, you got the Long Island Railroad, don't you?
As well as all the railroads, yeah. As well as subways. You know, I was there about 4 months ago before they put in most of the seats, but the basic building was done. It is different from Madison Square Garden, at least it seems to me different, in that it's closer, you're closer to the court.
The interior, the viewing.
Yeah. Madison Square Garden goes out gradually, this goes out less gradually as it goes up. And, you know, Madison Square Garden's a great place. This is another great place, and we now have another venue. Barbara Streisand's going to give a concert there, or two concerts, I think. Jay-Z is...
Tomorrow night, I think, right?
Tomorrow night. You know, it's just... It's major league sports to Brooklyn people go, you know.
It really looks like a very interesting building. I passed it while it was under construction. I haven't seen it since it was finished.
I forget the name of the architects, but it's iconic, and they've tried to do things differently. Bruce Ratner, Forest City Ratner that built it, they've tried to, the floor is a different pattern, and, you know, little things so that when you see it on television, you'll know instantly that that's that. And they've got this, a major league, an NBA basketball team, the New Jersey Nets, and now the Brooklyn Nets. And the first game is going to be Brooklyn versus Manhattan, if you will, or the Nets versus the Knicks. And it'll be exciting. And a crosstown rivalry is always good.
Absolutely. No.
Yeah, and you want both teams to be good. I mean, it's sad that the Mets have sort of fallen apart here. I would love to see them. I just think when both teams are healthy. And there's a great piece in The New Yorker. Gay Talese wrote a piece about Joe Girardi. And I learned more about Joe. I've known Joe, say I'm a friend. I met him a few times. We got together when he first came here. I congratulated him. He's a great manager, and you should read Gay Talese's piece about him.
The management report, the Bloomberg management report.
The Mayor's management report.
Happy or unhappy?
Well, most things, the report is accurate. I mean, I don't know how to answer your question other than we don't put just good things in it. You put all the numbers. I remember somebody saying to me at the very beginning when we were creating this, well, you know, these numbers we're not going to put in because they're not good. I said, what are you talking about? That's not the way you're supposed to work. You tell everybody what it is. Most of the numbers are good. Some of these things, you get them so good that the next, they can't always be, and they go up and down. I'll give you a good example. People were complaining, and the press was saying, oh, it's the end of the world as we know it, even though the murder rate is down, and we hopefully will set a new record this year. Shootings are up. Shootings are up. The world's coming to an end. You can't walk out your door. Well, it is true there was one month, I think it was July, where shootings hit a record high. The next month, shootings hit a record low. There's so much noise in the data when it's down there. And, you know, it isn't that they're trends. It's just things. It's like when you drive down the road. You're driving, and all of a sudden there's a traffic jam. And then you get up there, and all of a sudden traffic's speeding up. And you look,
what was the problem?
There's something called queuing theory, which I'm sure you studied in school.
Absolutely.
Which says that if there's enough randomness, you will get traffic jams, and you'll get open spaces, and it's the same thing with this kind of data. But the Mayor's Mansion report shows the city is doing well. We're cleaner, safer, living longer. Childhood obesity, we've made a little bit of progress, better than nothing. But we still have a long ways to go with obesity is the next big fight. School system is better. The good news is all the kids from minorities and non-minorities are doing better. Graduation rates way up from 45% to 65%, some number like that. That's the good news. The bad news is the rest of the world is improving even faster, and the demands of the marketplace industry for skill sets is going up even faster than we've been doing it. So we're going the right direction. We certainly have a long ways to go.
One of the things that you've been harping on now for quite a while, and that is the immigration rules and regs that we have, and the fact that the best and the brightest come here study, and we don't allow them to stay.
You should read Brooks's column in the New York Times today.
Yeah, I was going to reference the fact that the House was about to pass this bill, and interestingly enough, the Democrats throw the roadblock on it.
Because immigration reform means two things. It means the economics, and it means family reunification. And both sides, they're very different issues. Everybody sort of agrees on economics. But the reunification people, I think, want to hold it up, trying to trade economics for getting something that they need. It's a strategy that may work, but in the meantime, it hurts
Nothing
our economy.
Happens, right?
Well, we're hurting. People are unemployed, and they're getting hurt very badly. And David Brooks wrote this story about we need a handful of, I think his last line was, we need a handful of more gung-ho, hard-driving entrepreneurs, and they will do more to generate jobs than any president. And I'm not knocking the president, but there's a limit to what the federal government can do. The federal government is killing us because of the immigration policies and because of uncertainty. if they spent half as much time talking about trying to figure out how to create jobs than worrying about a marginal tax rate, which isn't going to influence anybody, we'd all be a lot better off. And I can just tell you, as a business guy, it's inconceivable that you would, if your tax rate changed a small amount, make different decisions in terms of opening businesses, expanding, buying a new house as a consumer, and that sort of thing. And it's certainly not true that we need more money in the system. I'm sympathetic to Bernanke, but he sits there and says, Congress isn't doing anything. I got to do something. And the only thing the Fed really can do is the money supply. But you can borrow as much money as you want today if you're a business. Most companies are flush with cash. That's not the reason people aren't expanding. That's not the reason individuals aren't buying houses and taking a risk and starting a business or new jobs. Washington should end this uncertainty so we know what kind of tax policies we're going to have, we know what regulations we're going to have, we know what our immigration policy is going to be, and then I think that you'll see an enormous growth in our economy. And until you do that, you're not going to see it.
And to that end, Congress has worked so hard over the past year. They're leaving town today
to go.
I mean, the earliest since 1960 that they're going home before an election. Unbelievable.
You know, I just if I tried to do that, can you imagine? You'd be all over me.
Absolutely.
The New York Press would be on me. But that's why, John, mayors and cities are where you have all of the improvement in education, crime fighting, environmental stuff. All of these different things are done at city levels in our country.
On the street, is what
and you
basically.
and the local press will not let you get away with what legislators do. They're in now. Some people would argue. I think it's Texas legislature. They meet for a few weeks every second year. In some state that I think it might be Texas. Some people would say, given the kind of laws the legislators pass, we're better off having gridlock or them not meeting. But nevertheless, local governments and, in all fairness, local legislators, our city council works a lot harder than legislators and legislatures at other levels too.
All right, Mr. Mayor, sit tight here. If you've got a question for the mayor, we'll make some time at the end. 800-321-0710. 800-321-0710. You'll have to talk with Mike Figliola to get on one of those lines. Give it a shot. 800-321-0710. Coming right back. The mayor wanted Bumper Music Friday back. He's got it. Long Island's Billy Joel.
I think that humanizes you and your show. It makes it so much more interesting. It gives us something substantive to talk about rather
instead
than economy.
Instead of this fall to roll that we spent
Well, we never fixed the economy, but we did fix Bumper Music Friday.
Hey, listen, you know what? Only you. Glad to do it. And we've got more throughout not only this hour, but the rest of this Friday John Gambling Show. You were talking about jobs. Earlier this morning, we were talking about the same thing because it is the subject matter. And you and I touched on it. I think it might have been even last week. But we need new industries. We need new product. We need new service.
Sure.
for those, all of those that are out of work and those to come to get in a job.
Yes.
Because the existing industries.
But you have to find ways to create jobs where the unemployed have the right skills. Because you can train people in processes when they're older, not my age, but young guy like you could, but you're not going to get people over 25, 30 to go back to school. There's a handful that will, and somebody say, oh, yes, I have a school that'll do it. But generally, that's not the case. And so, for example, we focus very hard on tourism. Tourism creates jobs, middle-class jobs and entry-level jobs. And they're jobs where people can, at both economic levels, can take those jobs. Having a computer science stuff here, most of us will never be computer scientists, but the support for them. So, you know, the computer scientists eat in restaurants, live and buy stuff in stores, take transportation and that sort of thing. And the reason we keep coming back to immigration is if you have immigrant workers who come in to, let's say, pick the crops in the field, number one, Americans aren't going to do those jobs. a lot of the crops rotted this year, raising our food prices and destroying farms in the Southeast. Couldn't get people to pick the crops. These are crops that machines can't do. But if we had people to pick them, then there would have been jobs up the economic scale to distribute and to sell and to inspect and that sort of thing. At the other end, the jobs with the most demanding technical skills, not everybody can do those, but those people create jobs down the economic ladder. And so you come together. And we've worked on biotech, for example. We are becoming the biotech center of the world. This week, Roche announced they're going to build the other building that was never built at the Alexandria Center, right behind Bellevue. Phenomenal thing for the city. The new Genome Center, the new hospital at 73rd Street, Cornell moving to Roosevelt Island, all of these things. That cements that industry here forever. Now, most people won't be able to work in that because they don't have the skills, but all the support stuff, it'll create construction jobs and service jobs.
Restaurants, as you said.
Absolutely.
Taxi cabs. So
the problem is, Washington talks about, what Washington can do is just vote money. Fundamentally, whether it's the politics or they don't have any understanding, they generally don't know how business works. They really don't. And they say, well, let's do infrastructure jobs. Yeah, we need infrastructure, although I point out the New York City taxpayers have reached in their pocket. We built a new subway line with our money because the state wouldn't give us any money. We've replaced an awful lot of underground stuff. We're a new water tunnel we're paying for, all of these things. So when the rest of the country says, well, our infrastructure is terrible, well, tax yourself and do it. I'm not so sure why we have to go to the federal government to do that, particularly when these places are complaining about New York and trying to steal our businesses away. But regardless, let's assume that we can focus and get the right infrastructure projects, which is hard to do. The average unemployed person in our country is not going to be a construction worker. Construction work is dangerous. It's hard. It's technically demanding. It's just the most construction workers. It's not just muscle. It is that those jobs have changed. There's a much more of an intellectual content as technology has made them more efficient and that sort of thing, and safer than they have ever been before, although it's still a dangerous occupation. We need the infrastructure, but it's not a jobs program. And that's what Congress and the rhetoric, if I'm elected to this job, I'm going to build infrastructure and everybody will be working again. No. The infrastructure you build is going to be useful 10 and 20 and 30 years from now. Yes, that's true. And we should make those investments. If we don't, we're going to find ourselves in a situation after, like we do it in the 70s here in New York City. It took us decades to recover from no infrastructure investments. But it's not a jobs program. Jobs have to be created at the local level by small businesses more than big businesses. What makes a small business go? It is generally not money. If you go, for example, to our small business services and you want to open a store, coffee shop, we will help you write a business plan. We'll send you to the banks that are likely to make loans. We'll send you to a bunch of accounting firms you can select from that deal with small businesses and understand that the rates and everything and the kind of forms they have to fill out. We'll send you to lawyers who can help you with some of that stuff. We'll send you to real estate agents that deal in small stores. We'll send a whole bunch of trained, vetted people that you can select from. And that kind of stuff at a local level really makes a difference. I had the governor of Delaware was in the other day. He and I had long breakfast, and he's actually a good guy. He's focusing on small businesses in Delaware. Delaware's total population is 900,000. That's
more people live in Co-op City.
But Staten Island's almost 900, probably 750 right. Something like that, and it's half of what Manhattan is, and less than half of what the Bronx and Queens and Brooklyn are. But you got to do it at the local level, job by job. And Congress doesn't do that very well. What Congress should do is the immigration policies, stop guns that go interstate, which are killing people and driving people off the streets. And so you don't want to go out and you're not going to start a business. They've got to make sure we have a military that gets the weapons they need, not the weapons that the congressperson wants to have built in their neighborhood. I love this. The Democrats want more public sector jobs. That's their solution to everything. The Republicans say, oh, that's terrible. We should let the marketplace work. And then they go and they spend federal monies to create jobs. It's private sector, right? But it's from public money. And they build weapons that the military services don't need. There's not a lot of difference in all fairness. And a lot of these things, we blame one side or another, but they try to do the same thing, maybe with a slightly different ways to approach it or paint it differently.
Is there any way out of it, or is it just, just life?
You should not be that depressed. We grow out of these things. We've been through these cycles many, many times before. People will get frustrated, and they'll say, well, this new wave of people who came in, they're wrong. And you'll throw the bums out, and you'll bring in another group who are great and wonderful until they become the bums, and they get thrown out. You know, this history gets repeated again and again and again. And I still think when people vote around the world with their feet, they come to America. We should never forget that.
That's true. And from what I'm told,
and to New York City, incidentally.
And from what I'm told, monies is coming in, are coming into the United States, and what's one of the reasons the stock market is as strong as it is.
People say, oh, you know, nobody's going to buy our debt. We should do something about the deficit. It really is a big problem. But whose debt are they going to buy? China, which we keep bashing China. If China's economy really goes and continues to go in the direction it's going, with contracting and stopping growing, that is not good for us. That's the market for our goods. There was an article, I think it was in the Times today, about selling stuff made in Brooklyn. We are manufacturing is growing in our country. Who the buyer is going to be? The Chinese are the big economies like that. Yes, and they also instantly sell stuff here that the public likes to buy at lower prices.
That's the way it works.
Yeah.
That's the way the winds blow around the world. 8:32 here on the John Gambling Show with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. More with the mayor and you. 800-321-0710. If you've got a question, here's Joe Bartlett.
Nibbling on sponge cake. Watching the sun bake. All of those tourists covered with oil. Strumming my six string. On my front porch swing. Smell of shrimp there again at a bar.
That's the mayor of Margaritaville singing there, Mr. Buffett.
Do you think your audience would rather listen to that than to you and I blabber on?
Do you want to know the truth?
No.
I didn't think so. No, I think they want to listen to us. All right, Mr. Buffett, thank you very much. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. There was a controversial ad where the MTA didn't want to take it. It had to do with jihad and, right. And the like. Thoughts?
The MTA didn't want to do it. The person who wanted to run the ad went to court. The court said the MTA can't stop it. So they'll, I assume, do what the courts order them to do. That's what you have to do.
And nothing got burned down as we are seeing in other places in the world, right?
That is true. Well, number one, I don't know if it's been up there. We have a very different view of the world, and we've grown up in a different culture where we have a freedom of expression that other people don't and a tolerance other people don't. And we think ours is the only way. They would argue they think theirs is the only way. And incidentally, there's an awful lot, I think it's probably true, that a much bigger percentage of the world goes without our freedoms than has our freedoms.
That's true.
You know, I'm not sure we should preach to anybody else. I think it's disgraceful that people go and kill people because of a movie or a trailer to a movie. I don't even think the movie was ever made. But, you know, you should know if you were to make a trailer like that, that you are going to kill people, or the people will get killed because of it. Whether it should be or shouldn't be, we've had enough experience in the world to know that. America is different. We tolerate dissenting views. We tolerate things that we may find despicable, because if the First Amendment is there, the belief is that the First Amendment protects you and me, but we have to protect everybody else if we're going to have that freedom, and we think it's the right ways to go about it. So, you know, in this case, the court's ruled. Then the MTA has to comply.
A little nuts and bolts here. I understand the choice has been handed down yesterday on the new taxi, the Nissan.
Yeah, some people complaining that it's not as environmental, as efficient as they would like it to be. None of those people, as I remember, were with us when we tried to put standards in to the requirement for taxis and cars in the city. The court said it's only up to the federal government and then maybe to the state government, but the city could not have what they call CAFE standards, or we couldn't have requirements of miles per gallon or whatever the case may be. So we couldn't include that in the selection process. But the cab of tomorrow is much safer. And it, even though it isn't as efficient as it could be, it is more efficient than most of the cabs on the street already. So, you know, if the law were different, we would have put it in there. But, you know, going and screaming, I want this, I want that. Yeah, well, number one, where were you when we fought the battle? Thank you very much. Of all the duplicitous, you know, come on, they just say these things. But this is a good thing for the city, and these cabs, the doors don't open out, they slide, which a lot of people get hurt when
bicyclists, when they,
sure,
you know, somebody opens a door.
Yeah, I mean, and the whole cab is much better designed.
I thought it was interesting this week when I read the story about some were, I'm not sure complaining is the right word, but noted that the number of red light camera summonses was going down and the revenue to the city was going down because people don't go through the red lights as much.
Isn't that the goal? Right. It's like complaining, oh, the tax revenues on tobacco are going down. It would be wonderful if they went to zero. It's just the stupidity of saying some of these things without thinking and understanding. Look, fines are there to deter certain kinds of activity, like running through a red light. Yes, it's great to have the revenue, and if we didn't have that revenue, we just have to raise your taxes and get the revenue elsewhere. So when the newspapers, it's outrageous, they're using fines to raise revenue. Okay, what's wrong with that? It is better than a tax because you don't have to run through a red light.
Correct.
Whereas you do have to pay your taxes. So don't run the red light, you won't pay your fine, and we won't have the money. We'll raise taxes elsewhere.
I was reading today that, speaking of taxes, New York State tax receipts are down.
Yeah, I saw that.
What's going on with the city? Online?
As of last time I talked to our budget director was maybe, what's today, Friday, beginning of the week, and our tax revenues were as projected. I think a lot of this is, it depends, if you had projected very aggressively higher taxes, lower expenses, and then you don't meet those targets, okay, the targets weren't met. If you project more conservative increase or tax revenues and more conservative in terms of being able to control expenses, then it's easier to meet those targets. I don't know that either is necessarily a bad policy. Some people would argue, let's be very aggressive, let's hope for the best, we can always fix it down the road, but maybe we'll get people to be more expansive and create jobs. Sometimes numbers create their own reality, and that's another way to look at it. I personally have thought that the city should be very conservative in terms of projecting and getting ahead of the game. There was an op-ed piece today that said, oh, you know, we're always going to have deficits. No, we're not always going to have deficits. We have balanced the budget every single year. There are built-in things that go up every year. For example, teachers, even though they haven't had a new teacher's contract, they get 3% raise on average every single year.
Even though they have no contract, because the law says the existing contract
calls what they call step functions. Right. For cops, they go up for the first 5 years, and that's sort of it. For teachers, I think they go up, I don't remember the numbers, it's been a long time, so looked at it in the 20 years kind of thing. But that's one of the reasons our expenses go up. The courts keep ruling things that we have to do more, we have to have another, and the legislature keeps adding another level of inspection, and every law that the legislature's passed costs money to enforce. And so you wonder why your taxes are going up? That's one of the things, not the biggest, but one of the things. Every judge's decision that we have to provide shelter for everybody, regardless of whether they just got off the airplane or the train or the bus or and showed up, that costs money. You know, everything you do. So your expenses are always going to go up, and so is your revenue over a long period of time. And the trick is to each year try to rein in your expenses. We've had half a dozen, maybe it's even, I think, what, nine rings a bell, nine different programs to reduce our expenses. Last one was $1.5 billion. This next one will be $1.5 billion, $2 billion. That's fine. That's what we're going to do. That's a good process. You give services, and then you find out which ones don't work, and then you cut back, and your expenses get back in line. Somebody wrote a column on one of the blogs, oh, we shouldn't rely on one-shots. Well, what are the one-shots? When things were tough, we put money away for when things were good, we put money away for when things are tough. That's not a one-shot. That's just intelligent planning. You do the same thing in your personal life. You save money for when the refrigerator breaks and you got to buy a new refrigerator, then you use the money that you save. That's not bad policy. And the same thing is true, this business with the taxi medallions, I think we'll win and I think we'll get that money. But if we didn't put that money in the budget, we would have had to cut back then. I mean, it's not like we gave up on the revenue for that revenue. It's just a new thing.
Well, last Friday, you announced or you have requested from all of the divisions and departments another cut.
Right. This is the beginning, and you go through a process, and every agency has to look and see if they can do things better, and then they sit down with the budget director and with me, and then we sit down with the city council, and everybody's got different priorities, but generally speaking, the agencies... You know, the job is an agency head has is to do what we need, but not to spend as much money as they possibly can. Every agency will say, I need more money. Yes, thank you very much. Now, there is not that money. You got to do your job. That's why you're there. And take a look at the police commissioner. He's got 5,000 fewer cops. We have at the moment, we've had the quietest summer in shootings we've had, I think, on record. We have the lowest number of murders we've ever had on record.
Response times
on non-critical things are up a little bit. The response times are still better than back when we had 5,000 more cops. So, you know, Ray is going to always say, I want more. That's his job. And it's my job to say no. And, you know, there's a limit to how much you can have. He gets more each year because the demands that our police department have in terms of protecting us from overseas threats and domestic threats and the compliance things that the courts and the legislatures keep adding to their job, and we give them more things to do. That's fine. But it's, you know, he's got a budget. Everybody's got a budget.
Reported New York City poverty rate up by 4.5% over the last year. Is that a function? I mean, if you live in that world, it is reality. And
it is reality. I mean, look, there's no question that there's a national recession. New York has weathered it better than everybody. We are creating a lot of jobs. We have more people working in New York City today than ever before. More jobs available than ever before. But in all fairness, a lot of the people who would be in the poverty level don't have the skill sets to get those jobs and to hold those jobs. That's a function of, in the past, we didn't have as good an education system as we have today. Tomorrow, it'll be that we didn't have today as good an education system as we should have had. Some people are harder to, you know, have more problems in learning than others. I was never a great student. You, of course, were straight A's, I'm sure.
Please.
But whatever. We have to, the nice thing about New York is we don't walk away from the poor. We have affordable housing, biggest program in the history of America, and we're going to get that done on time and through enormously difficult economic times, and we still kept building. The take up rate on these social welfare programs, a lot of which is federal money, but we administer it. We've done a very good job. The number of people sleeping on the streets is at an all time low, or so close to it that it's down. You're probably not. The only people left that sleep on the streets generally are people who have psychiatric or drug abuse, substance abuse problems, and we work with them. You can't incarcerate them. The law is clear about what you can do, and it's tragic, and we've got to keep working at it. But I can see people rushing to the phones and, you know, I want to get some publicity. I'm going to say the mayor is cold, hard, and cruel. No, Linda Gibbs and this administration has done more for people who need shelter, who need training, who need a meal, who need all the social services, medical care and everything, our public hospitals. We keep improving it and improving it. And it costs money.
All right, Mr. Mayor, as you can see from the screen in front of you, got a few folks here that would like to ask you some questions. Why don't I take my final break, and when we come back, we will get to them after this.
John Gambling and Mayor Mike on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
We continue. Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, pick up your earphone here. Let me punch number six. I got Ike in Brooklyn. Hello, Ike. Good morning.
Yeah, hi, Mr. Mayor.
I was
wondering, after reading the large soda ban law, soda sounds really bad for us, more so than some illegal drugs. I mean, it's very dangerous, diabetes, obesity. Why not just ban soda?
I think it's fair to say sodas aren't dangerous. Too much soda is not good for you. Like a lot of things, in moderation, there's nothing wrong with it. Smoking, probably there is something. Even one cigarette, nobody's quite sure how it works, but that's not something you can say, well, a little bit is good. But you can have a full-sugared Coke or Pepsi. If you drink a lot of them, then you get a lot of empty calories. You keep getting the calories and you don't feel full, and so you eat more and you get fat, and then you get obese, and then you come out with diabetes and blindness and lose limbs and that sort of thing. But also, I don't think that we should ban things. Our job in government is to tell you what the best science says that's in your interest, and then let you make the decision. So I've always fought against banning cigarettes. I think if you smoke, it's not very smart. But if you want to go outside where nobody else has to breathe the air that you're polluting, and you do it to yourself, okay. And in case of the Coke stuff and Pepsi stuff here, all we're doing is we are regulating the size of the cup that can be used to serve. So instead of 32-ounce cups, you can have only 16-ounce cups. But if you want to buy two, the vendor's willing, perfectly free to sell you the two cups. We hope that because you'd have to carry two back to your seat to come back up and get a second, you won't, and that will reduce the number of calories. And a great story in the New York Times on obesity going up in this country and life expectancy going down. It's really scary.
No, it is. It's incredibly scary. Ike, thanks a lot for that one. We head over to Jeff in Staten Island. Hello, Jeff.
Yeah, good morning. How you doing?
Good.
I have two questions, if I can hit it real quick. But what happens if the economy starts to turn around and the Fed starts to raise the interest rates? What's going to happen? Does it equal itself out?
Well, the Fed's going to... That's the balancing act the Fed has to do. It has to raise the rates to stop inflation, but not so much and so fast that it kills the recovery in the economy. And it's a balancing act. The trouble we have in this country is Congress is doing nothing with its fiscal policy, so the Fed is there trying to do everything with monetary policy, and there's limits to what it can do. But we certainly shouldn't blame the Fed for this. They're the only ones that are trying to act as adults, whether you agree or not. I happen to think that we don't need more money pumped into the system. Every company I know has plenty of cash. You can borrow as much money you want at very low interest rates if you are a business. But the Fed has to do something. They've got a responsibility, and they're trying to do it.
All right. Let's see if we can sneak another one in here. Harry, good morning. You've got the mayor.
Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Mayor, I'm a 50-plus year resident of New York City, and I have to say I've never been more proud to live here. Yesterday I had a chance to spend some time in City Hall Park, and, you know, it's a wonderful place, and I used to work downtown there.
Harry, hate to interrupt you. What's your question? Because we only have a minute.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, what's your view on the quality of leadership that's to come after your term?
Well, I hope that the next mayor is better than me and does a better job, because I plan to live in this city for the rest of my life. My kids, I think, will stay here. So I always wanted to hire people smarter than me, and I hope the people, whoever comes after me, and it's much too early to tell. It's a year and month and a half away. But hopefully the next mayor will take what we did and build on it the same ways we did what Rudy Giuliani did and what he did with his predecessors. You know, nobody's going to walk away with all the problems solved, but Rudy left us some things that were helpful building blocks. He brought crime down, for example, and welfare rolls down, and we've taken that and done a lot more with it. And hopefully whoever comes after us will do it, and they'll look back and say, you know, Bloomberg and before him going all the way back, the other 106 mayors all did good jobs, and we all learn and we build.
That's right. That's going to do it for today, Mr. Mayor. Enjoy over at the Barclays.
Looking forward to it. Going to be it's a great new addition to New York.
Watch the scissors.
I'll be careful.
We'll see you next Friday. Mayor Michael Bloomberg. We've got more coming up here, including our friend David Gregory from Meet the Press. We'll get into things political, I am sure. I got a few things I want to talk about as well. Glad that you are where you are. On the other side of the radio, it's 9 o'clock in the morning. Time for more news. Here's Joe.